Chapter 12. Beginning Christ and Christmas. Now carry out these designs with all the skill of an artist, and my story is told in Christian Science. Mary Baker Eddy, 1893. Each student associated with Mrs. Eddy saw her life as it related to his own endeavors. In February of 1893, the board of directors of the Mother Church was concerned with the selection of a new pastor, and Mrs. Eddy recommended Reverend David A. Easton, who had been in her last class in 1889. On Sunday, March 5th, Reverend Norcross read from the pulpit a letter from Mrs. Eddy in which she stated, "Now that the church and its much-respected pastor are about to separate, I trust they will part in Christian fellowship and love," which they did, Norcross remaining a loyal student. "Also, that the directors will immediately provide a pastor to fill this pulpit." Reverend Easton accepted their call, and the leader's letter to him on the 10th of March regarding his new undertaking may have stressed the shortcomings she had seen in Norcross in recent months. "I feel it my duty to state to you the spiritual need of my old church in that city. It is, in short, a revival, an outpouring of love, of the Spirit that beareth witness. I found it essential when the pastor of this church to lead them by my own state of love and spirituality, by fervor in speaking the word, by tenderness in searching into their needs, and especially by feeling myself and uttering the spirit of Christian Science, together with the letter. One more candid hint I will throw out on things less sacred, but very requisite. Give the mesmerists no points to your disadvantage. The wicked horde of this class in Boston exceed any other place. Never name, and caution your family also, any belief of sickness in the past or present, no private experiences of any sort, unless they are good and true. The horde of wicked mesmerists in Boston were largely former Christian Scientists who had turned from their high calling and turned their thoughts to malpractice, many ignorantly, but some with malice aforethought. Before another 2 years were to pass, they would give the students in Boston much to meet. William Johnson was largely responsible for the pleasant separation between the Boston Church and Reverend Norcross, and before March was over, he helped to solve another problem. Joseph Armstrong was doing very well as the new publisher at the Publishing Society, but Mrs. Eddy needed closer contact with him and felt he should replace Eastman on the board of directors. This would improve her relationship with Joseph Armstrong, as well as being a help to Captain Eastman in his healing work. But how to accomplish this without offending that dear heart? That mission fell to Mr. Johnson, and he performed it tactfully and graciously. On the 25th of March, Mrs. Eddy wrote to him gratefully, "Well done, good and faithful. My hope is fulfilled, and Captain Eastman is a great-hearted, honest man. I thank God for this." A sentence at the bottom of her letter held great import for Mr. Johnson and for the other directors. Quote, "The church must be built in 1894. Deo volente, end quote. Meanwhile, Mrs. Eddy's idea of having Gilman paint her portrait was being enlarged by the hand of God. Perhaps it was her desire for a true likeness that brought forth the poem, Christ and Christmas, a very true depiction of her earth experience. She called Mr. Gilman to Pleasant View on the 11th of March and asked him if he thought he could make some illustrations for her poem. She read to him, Christ and Christmas. O'er the dark night of chaos shone one lone, brave star, still circling on from zone to zone, bright, blessed, afar. In tender mercy, spirit sped a loyal ray to rouse the living, wake the dead, and point the way. The Christ ideal God anoints of truth and life, the way in science he appoints, which stills all strife. What the beloved knew and taught, science repeats through understanding dearly sought with fierce heartbeats. For heaven's Christus, earthly Eves, by Adam bid, make merry feast on Christmas Eves, or babe and crib. Creatures of dust, of woman born, are mortals frail, but Christ eternal, not forlorn, pales this glad tale. Why should ye celebrate the birth of one nearer born, who can depict the glorious worth of that high morn? Christ was not crucified, that doom was Jesus' part, for Sharon's rose must bud and bloom in human heart. Forever present, bounteous, free, truth glows through gloom, and I with grace towards you and me for health makes room. An olden faith's pale star now blends in seven-hued white, life without birth and without end, emitting light. The way, the truth, the life, his word are here, for now this mental healing of her Lord crowns wisdom's brow. Winged Christian Science soars to view the great I Am, with all his glory shining through mind, mother, man. As in blessed Palestina's hour, so in our age, 'tis the same hand unfolds his power and writes the page. Christ calls tonight, oh, take me in, no mass for me, but give me all thy heart, from sin be cleansed, be free. Following the reading, she said that she would make no suggestions at present, then gave him a copy of the poem, and sent him home with this admonition, quote, let no one know anything about this undertaking. Keep it sacredly to yourself, and look to God for guidance and inspiration, end quote. 4 days later, Gilman wrote the following letter. Dear Mrs. Eddy, you have written a wonderful poem, sublime and beautiful, and full of vital meaning, which appears the plainer as it is read many times, as it needs to be, for me to come into the completer understanding of its great import. The lone brave star is divine science. The seven-hued white, that is God. What earthly symbols can be imagined that can forcibly typify such original, symmetrical, spiritual concepts. My imagination that I have thought was boundless cannot yet reach it, and doubtless never can completely. Can yours, think you? Pictorial representation cannot compass every thought. I have had some conceptions already of some things relating to the poem that appear to me good. Because of his intuitive sense, Mrs. Eddy had thought that he might perceive that Christ and Christmas was the story of her life, but he did not. So she gave him helpful suggestions on his next visit on the 18th of March. However, although he had asked for her spiritual guidance in the pictorial depiction, he did not accept it readily. On this day, she showed him two illustrated poems, one by Carol Norton and the other, O Little Town of Bethlehem, by Phillips Brooks. At this interview, Mrs. Eddy approved his design for the first picture, Star of Bethlehem, and gave him ideas for some of the other verses. He was so inspired by her Christly conception of truth versus error as one of the leading illustrations, and so uplifted by her spiritual appreciation of the lovely and beautiful in truth, that he dwelt upon it day and night until these beautiful thoughts began to take form in his sketches. This inspired design required practically no modification in all the future work upon it. However, complacency soon set in. Mrs. Eddy told Gilman on one visit that by watching his thought, he could tell when he was in the toils of animal magnetism. She warned against the self-satisfied, pleased at nothing, complacent thought. But self-analysis is not easily accomplished. So it was a shock when she notified him on the 10th of April that God had bidden her to give up this project altogether, and he must do the same. In the wake of this blow, he strove to work metaphysically, but seemed to sink into the depths of despair, until the sad hours seemed endless and his efforts fruitless. He said, "I persisted, but the light of my deliverance appeared farther away than ever, until finally I arrived at the material sense of despair in which my inability to raise myself by this mental logic to the heaven of truth's supremacy became very apparent, and I was beginning to see what Jesus meant when he said, quote, 'I can of mine own self do nothing,' end quote. Because however logical the merely human reasoning, it of itself had no actual living power. Consequently, could not deliver me. Seeing this marked the death of a mortal sense. Then I was free to turn to God alone to save me, and very soon the light of God's presence and infinite goodness as mine to know began to dawn, revealing the Christ as the soul of Christian Science and my real being. It was now morning, and I arose early for a walk in the pure fragrance of this spiritual consciousness, so at one with the unfolding springtime, melodious with the songs of the birds, all of which was now to me typical of the risen Christ, my life and hope, all sufficient. After a few days of this newfound freedom and happiness, he felt impelled to write Mrs. Eddy. Dear Mrs. Eddy, I have been thinking of many things since I saw you, and it has come to me that in the case of so great and beautiful a poem as yours, there must be someone spiritually minded enough so that you would feel God's approval in having the poem illustrated. Perhaps the artist in New York who made the illustrations for Carol Norton's poem that you showed me would be equal to the work. At any rate, I feel that the work should not be given up simply because I have not proved to be spiritually equal to the task. Mrs. Eddy had to reject Mr. Gilman's sketches of designs, but perhaps this new humility would enable him to look to God's chosen one for leadership in the field of art, as well as of science. The very next day, she had a note delivered to him, telling him to resume the work. This was followed by a letter on April 16th, in which she said, "God will inspire you if only you follow his reflection. The window for this age will let in the true thought to be delineated. Copy it, Mother." After discussing the illustrations on his next visit to Pleasant View, she remarked, quote, "Your thought is so much better and purer," end quote. This was the first of many trials which purified and elevated his thought, a prerequisite for the work at hand. But he was scarcely past it before the next problem presented itself. This next trial was with the local Christian Scientists whose company he had sought and enjoyed. Most probably, the sacred secrecy he was maintaining on his work for Mrs. Eddy and the frequent messages he received from her offended mortal mind and made Gilman appear aloof and clandestine, resulting in a good deal of gossip. So he would not lose the spiritually inspired designs she had impressed upon him, Mrs. Eddy wrote on the 8th of May, "Now carry out these designs with all the skill of an artist, and my story is told in Christian Science, the new story of Christ, and the world will feel its renovating influence. Do not delay, nor trouble your thought to deviate from what God has given me to suggest, but follow it implicitly. Remember this." By the date of this letter, the gossip about Mr. Gilman and his activities had culminated in false accusations, causing him to seek new quarters. His abrupt move on the 10th of May brought forth a venom he had never imagined. But he was able to assess it as error's resistance to truth, and wrote in his diary, quote, "It is doubtless occasioned by my connection with the work of illustration for Mrs. Eddy, which is to deal a blow to error in a future day. It appears as a determined obstacle of resistance to this work being carried out." End quote. His new rooms were a decided improvement, and they proved a joy to him for several days, but he had more to learn about malicious mind before he was past this hurdle. The following Sunday, a sense of dissatisfaction and depression set in, which increased until it caused him to try to postpone his appointment with Mrs. Eddy on Monday evening. But she insisted on seeing him and even inquired into the particulars of this problem, a thing she usually refused to listen to with students. But Gilman's metaphysical progress was an important part of his work in illustrating Christ in Christmas, and he needed the leader's guidance in that as well as in his artwork. Mrs. Eddy was extremely sensitive to the thoughts of others, and she knew that Gilman was too, although he was unaware of it. She told him that he had been talked up by the scientists in Concord on Sunday, and his depression was one of the results. He doubted it because his understanding of ignorant mental malpractice was no greater than that of the scientists indulging in it. But she reiterated her statement and told him that the particular claim causing the trouble needs to be singled out, exposed, and denied. Then the trouble disappears. She understood his sensitivity and advised him to leave Concord after the poem was illustrated and to cease attending Christian Science services in the meantime in order to guard his consciousness from the thoughts of others. When he expressed regret at causing so much trouble for her, she replied, quote, "That is nothing. I am used to that. I have all my life been enduring such hardships as you are experiencing, and all for good, as I have been led later to see." End quote. Another difficulty she constantly faced came to Mr. Gilman's attention at this time, when she asked Laura Sargent to get a lot of pictures of herself, which she had recently put together expressly for the artist. When Laura failed to find them, Mrs. Eddy and Mr. Fry joined the search, but found them not. Mrs. Eddy then said to Mr. Gilman, quote, "They were put in a drawer in my room, and now they are not to be found in my room. That is a specimen of the mysteries connected with this house." End quote. Gilman's impression of Mrs. Eddy in the spring of 1893, when she was in her 72nd year, is of interest. Mrs. Eddy rarely appears to me mentally as one aged in years, but more often like a beautiful, spiritually minded, young or middle-aged lady who is always actively kind and often given to graciously expressing this. She has a keen sense of the humorous, but never appears to seek to see it or express it in any way. But where it appears in evidence unsought, as it often did in the progress of the work on these illustrations, she was quite as free and unrestrained as any joyous child. The next attack of malicious mind that Gilman experienced was doubt of Mrs. Eddy. Because he was an earnest and dedicated student, he did not really doubt her in his heart. Nonetheless, he was beset by suggestions of materiality, clamoring to attach their limitations to the leader, and he had a day's battle in routing these antagonistic thoughts. When he had passed this trial, he wrote of it to Mrs. Eddy, in part, somewhat as follows. The burden of these thoughts was that Mrs. Eddy, after all, was human and mortal, like other people, and therefore not perfect. The material sense, blind as always to spiritual things, was clamoring to be heard. I found that I should be greatly pained to think that she was willingly thinking such thoughts of me, notwithstanding they might be just from a material estimate. I found I wished to be regarded as I was in the real being, as I was when I was completely myself, spiritually, and this helped me finally to the overcoming of these unnatural, unfavorable thoughts. The immense work of good which has been accomplished by Mrs. Eddy ought to be sufficient to guard us from entertaining material thoughts of her in the least. I see plainly today that the antagonism is begotten in the general sea of materiality, which resists the truth which Mrs. Eddy stands for, as frost appears to resist the light and warmth of sunshine for a time. Gilman's triumph over this trial brought a state of happiness and spiritual progress, which was immediately manifested in his illustrations. He worked at that time on what are now the 6th, 7th, and 10th pictures, Christian Science Healing, The Child Reading Science and Health, which is not titled, but which Mrs. Eddy has called Suffer Little Children, and Truth versus Error. The designs were essentially Mrs. Eddy's ideas, which she had to communicate to her artist at the easel. In discussing Christian Science Healing, he had argued at some length that the healer should have an attitude of perfect repose and calmness, to which Mrs. Eddy responded, quote, yes, but love yearns, end quote. Mrs. Eddy then took an attitude to express her spiritual concept to some extent to me of what the spiritual posture of one spiritually would be, who was reflecting the divine healing capacity in the act of raising from a sick bed one who was being held in the bondage of belief of the reality of evil or error. First, she looked upward with a meekly confident yearning far away from material sense look, and at the same time with her right arm and hand raised with the index finger in a childlike way, pointing upward, heavenward. The other arm and hand was stretched out in a downward direction, as if towards suffering humanity, appealing and yet joyously, all in spiritual purity and adoration. When he showed her his rendition on Tuesday evening, the 23rd of May, she exclaimed, quote, oh, Mr. Gilman, this is the best piece of work you have ever done, end quote. Quite obviously, her words did not apply to his very human depiction of Mrs. Eddy in this scene. For the rest of that week, Gilman worked diligently to realize his, quote, true, normal manhood in God, end quote, And, quote, to keep from falling into the drowsy, mesmeric sleep, which Mrs. Eddy's thought, particularly of last Tuesday evening, showed to me I was continually doing. End quote. In this awakened state of consciousness, he resumed work on the illustration of truth at the door, which he had begun a couple of months earlier. When Mrs. Eddy had first outlined several illustrations for him, he had written of this one. One in particular she appeared to emphasize, which called for the representation of love and truth's spiritual idea in the most perfect form of feminine, youthful beauty that I could conceive, bearing the message of Christian Science truth and knocking at the door of a palatial mansion to represent the abode of material sense. Beginning on Tuesday night, the conception and execution of this painting unfolded like a beautiful flower. So he was eager to show it to Mrs. Eddy the following Saturday afternoon. Upon his arrival at Pleasant View, she began showing him several youthful pictures of herself and sent Laura Sargent to bring two in particular that were missing from the collection. Just as Laura returned, Gilman took up his painting. As soon as Mrs. Eddy's eyes rested upon the picture, she was very still for a moment, and then she said, quote, Laura, look here. Look at that picture, end quote. I began to fear that it looked dreadful to her on account of the exposed shoulder, especially when Laura began to say, quote, oh, why, mother, mother, end quote. But adding, quote, isn't that beautiful? Beautiful, end quote, reassured me. And Mrs. Eddy echoed her words, and they both were in that joyousness that finds expression in tears. And Mrs. Eddy was saying, quote, it is the perfect representation of the ideal I had in thought, end quote. Afterwards, when Laura, still having the pictures in her hand that she had brought down, holding them toward Mrs. Eddy, said, quote, here are the pictures you wanted, end quote. Mrs. Eddy said, quote, we don't want them now. He has got the picture perfect, end quote. Gilman's next experience was something that all of Mrs. Eddy's household experienced, and few, if any, understood. That is, sharp rebukes from the leader. Gilman's elation at his success had brought him from the heavenly heights of inspiration back to earth with a thud, back to a material sense of self-satisfaction. It is far harder to waken one and turn him away from pleasure in matter than from pain. Hence the cross Mrs. Eddy had to bear of constantly rebuking self-satisfied students to force them up higher. Many reacted and left Christian Science, but Gilman sought the lesson and increased spirituality. He was able to write, if for truth's sake we accept rebuke willingly for the sake of its purifying power, then we shall soon gain the sense of truth's supremacy, followed by the demonstration thereof. I never have felt this, so deeply before, and it has revealed practically the deeper truth of so many passages of science and health that before were accepted so lightly. This experience has outlined very definitely to me that the great spiritual attainments of Mrs. Eddy manifest through the great good that has come to the world through her spiritual obedience, makes the reception of the lessons of rebuke from her far more possible than it otherwise would be. In this chastened state, he worked on the picture Christmas Morn, which he took to Pleasant View to show to Mrs. Eddy on Thursday evening, the 15th of June. He wrote in his diary, quote, "Mrs. Eddy did not appear to like my picture," end quote. He had had difficulty trying to depict angels moving swiftly through the air without wings. But though he got the ideas he needed for the picture that Thursday evening, he seemed to suffer the deepest despair the next day, the deepest he had ever known. It appeared to beget a feeling that spirituality and heaven were terribly costly. It seemed then as if every footstep forward caused numberless pangs, which appeared more than heaven was worth. It seems to my personal sense as if there was an endless big self to overcome at a terribly slow pace for a heaven which appeared good indeed, but very costly. This dark hour preceded the dawn of renewed inspiration. Immediately after the peculiar dark period, I was walking toward Bow Mills about sunset. In this walk, I was still naturally in my freshly attained, chastened sense, and therefore more ready to hear and see spiritually. The sky was mostly cloudy, but a break in the clouds in the west occurred as I walked, so that the sundown rays of light streamed through, causing a sharp cupola that was on a building just in line with me, and the sunset rays of light, together with some beautiful trees, to appear silhouetted against the light western sky in a very picturesque, artistic way. Immediately, the Spirit of Truth said to me, "There, that is what is wanted in the picture with the angels, to represent the heavenly worth of that high morn." And so it proved, for when I showed it to Mrs. Eddy, she at once expressed great joy because of the spiritual beauty of the whole picture, as expressing her sense of the verse in the poem it was intended to illustrate, and she asked for no change to be made in it. Early in July, Mrs. Eddy and Gilman were working on the pictures Seeking and Finding and Christian Unity. It was about this time that Mrs. Eddy showed two of the nearly completed paintings with which she was very pleased to her household for the first time. During these weeks of work, Gilman had been learning a lesson in sacred secrecy. Jesus' instruction to be wise as serpents, together with Mrs. Eddy's elucidation that, quote, "the wisdom of a serpent is to hide itself," end quote, had been practically applied. He wrote, "Mrs. Eddy, very soon after the beginning of the illustration work, began to impress upon my thought the great importance of having my mind pure from the thoughts of those about me. At first, this appeared to be confined mainly to keeping entirely to myself the work on the illustrations I was doing for her. Then, as the time passed, she began to refer to the importance of this in any undertaking that was the outcome of pure motives, and especially spiritual aspirations." Mrs. Eddy explained that by keeping our thought pure from the conceptions of others, until our own individual conceptions had taken, through the Spirit's inspiration, their definitely proper form, we would be giving place solely to the formation of the divine perfect mind, and the results would more nearly correspond to the true ideals actuating us. In this, it was made clear to me that it was not alone in the keeping of spiritual conceptions hidden in sacred secrecy from people unspiritual in thought, but from all. This made plain to me why she included those of her own household in her requests that I keep entirely to myself what I was doing until the proper time should arrive. This thought appeared to be universal in its application as she impressed it upon my apprehension. And now another period of complacency and another rebuke. Mrs. Eddy was greatly pleased with the two paintings she had shown to her household, especially the very important facial expressions, with slight exceptions, which she thought best to leave lest the work be marred. Gilman's self-confidence exceeded his spirituality when improving them, and the altered pictures brought forth displeasure and rebuke. A few days later, chastened and spiritually receptive, he obediently brought his paintings and brushes to Pleasant View to correct his work. Mrs. Eddy had a mother's concern that he would feel hard toward her, and upon his assurance that he did not, responded joyfully, "I am so glad. Oh, you don't know what burdens I have borne through the necessity I have felt for rebuking students, but who could not receive my rebuke as coming from true love for them. This is the great test of the true student. If they are found unwilling to bear this test, they are not worthy to be found in this work. It is the resentment that rebuke uncovers or excites that makes up the burden, the terrible burden that I have had and still have to bear in this pioneer work of Christian Science. It was nothing but a constant joy to me to minister to the needs of humanity in the healing work. It was when I began to teach and be faithful with students that I began to know of suffering and sorrow." The two artists often worked upstairs in Benny's room, but on this morning, Gilman worked up there alone. In fact, most often he worked alone, for these illustrations were occupying all of his time, while Mrs. Eddy had many, many things constantly demanding her attention.